Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. And welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to have a little bit of Al Jarreau before we begin tonight's program, just so we can continue to get things in order. Here we go with that.
Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. I have an, if you will all bear with me, an interesting choice of subject tonight. That subject is disturbing to some, very ecclesiastical to others, and I should say the word hyper mystical. Others, is the universe conscious? And if so, what is that conscious? What is the consciousness of the universe? if we can accept and believe that the universe was created by God for his children to live in, what would the consciousness of the universe be? Well, tonight I'm going to try to bridge the gap between the consciousness of the universe and God's love. Because we are all a product of that love from God. And I'm happy to see a very special person is in the room tonight, so we're going to get right to it. What is God's love, and how does that love look? We wake up every day, sun is there, we take a breath, and our lungs fill with air. Is that God's love? Answer, yes. We're able to see, touch, taste, feel, and hear this environment that we live in. We're able to feel pain. We're able to feel joy. We are able to experience all these things. What is that? That's God's love. So since we live in a universe where all these things can happen, then it makes sense that the question would be asked, is the universe conscious? And if so, what is that consciousness? There are many prominent scientists right now that are asking that very same question that we're going to take a look at tonight. My experiences personally these past few months have taught me individually a great deal about the consciousness of the universe and this thing that we call love or God's love. A proto-conscious field theory could one day replace the theory of what they're calling now dark matter, or a form of physics which exists in the universe. What consciousness is and where it emanates from has stymied great minds in societies across the globe since the dawn of time. There has been much speculation about the consciousness of the universe. And I'm speaking from my personal experiences and my personal reflections because I'm talking to a particular mind tonight. In today's world, the consciousness of the universe is a realm tackled more and more by physicists, cognitive scientists, neuroscientists, all over the globe. And there are a few prevailing theories that have come forward. That first theory is materialism. This is a notion that consciousness emanates from matter. In our case, by the firing of electrical impulses through the neurons in our mind, which exists that houses our brain. But is what we think simply relegated to something that we can taste, touch, feel, and put in our hands? I'm going to say this cannot be. It must not be just limited to what is material. Why? We are forever giving things to people. But what value is this thing that we give? Let's say they throw it away. is the value of the gift, the materialism of the gift, lost because it's thrown away? No. Because it is the mind that conceptualized the giving that is important and not the substance of the gift. So let's see if we can take the brain out of the equation and consciousness doesn't exist at all. Traditionally, scientists have been stalwart materialists. They would not let the idea go. But doing so has caused many of them to slam up against the limitations of materialism. Consider the void, the chasm that exists between the theory of relativity and what they're calling now quantum mechanics, or the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And you quickly begin to realize and recognize there are inconsistencies and incongruencies in the idea of limiting things to materialism. The material is not the most important thing. It is the idea of the giving that is most important, the idea. The second theory would be mind-body dualism. And this is perhaps, as some of you will learn as you begin to delve into psychology classes throughout the school year, dualism. This is perhaps more often recognized in religion or spirituality. Here, consciousness is separate from matter. It is a part of another aspect of the individual, which in religious terms we might call the soul. Then there's a third option, which is gaining ground in some psychological circles, what they call panschisms. In this view, the entire universe is inhabited by consciousness. A handful of scientists are starting to warm up to this theory, but it's still a matter of great debate. Truth be told, panschisms sounds very much like what the Hindus and the Buddhists call Brahman, that tremendous universal Godhead of which we are all a part. In Buddhism, for instance, consciousness is the only thing that exists. Well, how can this be? If all there is consciousness that exists, then what we see, what we feel, what we taste, what we touch, and what we hear does not exist unless the Godhead says it exists. When you reach out and you touch the face of someone you care for and love dearly, are you truly touching them, or are you touching the idea of that person? As I said earlier, it is the idea which is most important. Why? Because if that person isn't there and they're in your mind, then they exist whether you see them or not. I was in an in-depth conversation with a friend some time ago, and he argued his point with me most vigorously, because he's a Christian and I'm a Muslim. He said that the physical form of this person, man that we call Jesus, the Godhead, died 2,000 years ago. My reply to him was, the Jesus person that existed 2,000 years ago is as much alive today as he was physically 2,000 years ago, and I can prove why. So he said, prove it. I said, when you bow down your head to the floor and you drop to your knees in supplication and prayer, whose name are you invoking and who are you calling forth to give you quiet of mind? Who are you asking to ease the pain in your heart? Who are you talking to give you peace? You're calling on the presence. You're calling upon the mind. You're calling upon the will of Jesus to give you that quietness so that your heart doesn't ache. You're calling forward a man who lived 2,000 years ago. So where is that man alive at? And if you truly love Jesus as we all should love Jesus, then you're calling upon that spirit that lives in your mind to give you peace of mind. Why? Because he is the Jesus. He's that physical representation which lives inside of you that is more important to you than your own jugular vein. Because he is the embodiment of your vision of God. Jesus. And I say, if that were not true, you could not call upon his name to invoke an idea and a drive and a will in you for peace for the love of another person. So in Buddhism, consciousness is the only thing that exists. Such is also the focus of the of a famous Zen koan or a saying. And in Zen, it says, if a tree falls in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Answer, yes. You just weren't there to hear it fall. But it made a sound. That vibration, when it hits the ground, boom, sends a vibration through the earth that is felt by the animals. Your mind wasn't there, but the life of the animals were there because they got out of the way to do what? Not get hit by that tree when it fell. We must come to the realization that everything we experience is filtered through and interpreted by our mind. Without it, the universe doesn't exist at all, or at least not without some sort of consciousness observing it. In some physics circles, the prevailing theory is some kind of proto-consciousness field. There was a word used out amongst some of the, what is the word, Harold? Metaphysics, where they said that a field of all the knowledge and wisdom in the world existed. They called it the Akashic field. Well, there is some truth to that. But you have to delve into the terminology of this word, Akashic, and see where it comes from and what it means. Then you could agree. In quantum mechanics, particles don't have a definite shape or a specific location, but they are there until they are observed or measured. Is this a form of a proto-consciousness at play? According to the late scientist and philosopher John Archibald Wheeler in his writings, it might. He is famous for coining the term which we use today, black hole. In his view, every piece of matter contains a bit of consciousness, which it absorbs from this proto-consciousness field. He called this theory the participatory anthropic principle, the participatory anthropic principle. And you all must forgive me a little bit if my words get a little twisted and jumbled. I'm a little emotional right now. And so just bear with me. My mind and my heart are racing at two different speeds. I'm trying to get them on the same page. We are participators in bringing into being not only the near and the here, but the far away and the long ago. Sound like a lot of gobbledygook, don't it? But in his view, much like the Buddhist one, nothing exists unless there is a consciousness to apprehend it. Well, what is the greatest overall consciousness in existence? We call that consciousness God. Doesn't matter what name you want to call God. We just accept the fact that there is God. Christoph Koch, he's a noted neuroscientist. He's from the Allen Institute for Brain Science. He is another person who is a supporter of panschisms. Koch says that the only theory we have to date about consciousness is its level of awareness about oneself in the world. Biological organisms are conscious because when they approach a new situation, they can change their behavior in order to navigate it. In this view, Dr. Koch is attempting to see if he can measure the level of consciousness an organism contains. He hopes to be running some animal experiments later on in the year or next year. But in the experiments that he has done, in one, he plans to wire the brains of two mice together. Will information eventually flow between the two? Will their consciousness at some point become one fused, integrated system? If these experiments are successful, he may end up wiring up the brains of two human beings. I, for one, find that possibility disgusting. UK physicist Sir Roger Penrose is yet another supporter of panschisms. Penrose is in the 80s, proposed that consciousness is present at the quantum level and resides in the synapses of the brain. He is famous for linking consciousness with some of the goings-on in quantum mechanics. Dr. Penrose doesn't go so far as to call himself a pan-physicist. In his view, the laws of physics produce complex systems, and these complex systems lead to consciousness, which then produces mathematics, which can then encode in a succinct and inspiring way the very underlying laws of physics that give rise to the idea. Veteran physicist Gregory Matloff of the New York City College of Technology, he says, some preliminary evidence showing that at the very least, panschisms isn't impossible. It's a start, according to Dr. Matloff. It's all very speculative. but it's something we can check and either validate or falsify. Theoretical physicist Bernard Hayes in 2006 suggested that consciousness is produced and transmitted through the quantum vacuum or empty space. Any system that has sufficient complexity and creates a certain level of energy could generate or broadcast consciousness. Dr. Matloff got in touch with an unorthodox German physicist and proposed observational studies to test the idea. What they examined was something called Perrengo's discontinuity. This is the observation that cooler stars, like our sun, revolve around the center of the Milky Way faster than hotter ones. Some scientists attribute this to interaction with gas clouds. Matloff took a different view. He elaborates this in a recently published piece in the Journal of Consciousness Exploration and Research. Unlike their hotter sisters, cooler stars may move faster due to the emission of a unidirectional jet. Such stars emit a jet early on in their creation. Matloff suggests that this could be an instance of the star consciously manipulating itself in order to gain speed. Observational data shows a reliable pattern anywhere Perrengo's discontinuity is witnessed. If it were a matter of just interacting with gas clouds, as is the current theory, each cloud should have a different chemical makeup and so cause the star to operate differently. So why do all of them act in exactly the same way? Though it isn't much to go on, the unveiling of the European Space Agency Gaia Space Telescope, whose mission is to map stars, may provide more data to further support or weaken this view. On another front, Dr. Matloff posits that the presence of a proto-consciousness field could serve as a replacement for dark matter. However, I'm going to posit that this proto-consciousness field is dark matter, the prevailing substance of the universe that you cannot quantify it because you can't find it. You only know it's there because of the effect that it has on the environment, around it. It is my position that dark matter is the thinking of God, the active thinking of God. Then there is his permissive will called dark energy. Dark matter supposedly makes up around 95% of the universe, although scientists can't seem to find any. So for the sake of argument, if consciousness is a property that arises on a subatomic level with a confluence of particles, how do these tiny little bits of consciousness coalesce together? Neuroscientist and psychologist Giulio Tononi of the University of Wisconsin in Madison proposes a slightly different take on panpsychisms, which he says is called integrated information theory. Here, consciousness is a manifestation with a real physical location somewhere in the universe. We just haven't found it yet. Perhaps this heavenly body radiates out consciousness as our sun radiates out light and heat. I'll agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. Because this heavenly body is the person of the physical God. It is his thought and his will that allows the universe to exist. It is his thought and his will that opens up this space that we live in, that we call space. It is his thinking. And without his thinking, we don't exist. Dr. Tononi has actually put forth a metric for measuring how much consciousness a thing has. The unit is called phi, P-H-I. This translates into how much control a being can enact over itself or objects around it. The theory separates intelligence from consciousness, which some people assume are one and the same, and they are not. Take AI, for example. It can already beat human beings in all kinds of tasks, AI meaning artificial intelligence. But it has no will of its own. A supercomputer which can enact change in the world outside of a programmer's command would therefore be conscious. Many futurists, from Ray Kurzweil to Elon Musk, believe that day is coming, perhaps in the next decade or so, according to their thoughts, and that we should prepare for this. To hear more of what Sir Roger Penrose thinks of the matter, Pan Schisms, he has a YouTube channel where he discusses it, but I don't think it's worth your time. So what is the relationship as to whether or not the universe is conscious? For those of us that believe in a living, breathing, physical presence of God, in the Nation of Islam, we call this person Allah came in the person of Master Farid Muhammad. This perfect being who is the emanation of the mind and the consciousness of the universe. And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. To that end, we'll be right back. We're going to try to take a quick commercial break. I can get a drink of water and we can continue with tonight's program. So, we'll depart with the whistle of the train. And we're going to come back with a little bit of Candy State. Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Howard, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Now, before anyone begins to tell me that I need to get off my high horse and put my feet back on the ground and stop getting so metaphysical, I balance the subject matters out that I speak about against the other scientific writings of others that are out here. In this case, there was an article penned in the Daily Galaxy, another science journal that I read. And in this article in the Daily Galaxy, the question is, the ultimate mystery. Consciousness may exist in the absence of matter. And to quote Edward Witten, who is a theoretical physicist at the Institute of Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, who for some odd reason had been compared to Isaac Newton or Albert Einstein, he says this: I have a much easier time imagining how we understand the Big Bang than I have imagining how we can understand consciousness. Are human beings just one among a billion species that evolved over billions or trillions of years on one rocky planet, among trillions of planets circling hundreds of billions of stars in a galaxy that is just one among hundreds of other billions of galaxies that, for all we know, contain another billion or so of unimaginable life forms, all located in an expanding cosmic bubble that is only one among an enormous number of bubble universes. Is it possible that this entire multiverse is the result of one species of conscious creatures we ultimately call Homo sapiens? It seems unlikely, but is it possible that consciousness may exist by itself without us, even in the absence of matter? Just like gravitational waves, excitation of space that may exist in the absence of protons and electrons, suggests Stanford University's Russian-American theoretical physicist Andre Lind in Life, Universe, Consciousness, about the central mystery of our time. Will it not turn out with the further development of science that the study of the universe and the study of consciousness will be inseparably linked, and that ultimate progress in one will be possible without progress in the other? The universe and the observer exist as a pair. Dr. Lin says, I cannot imagine a consistent theory of the universe that ignores consciousness. In a recent galaxy report, alien worlds are humans or rather I should say alien worlds, two, are humans a genetic accident? Alien worlds to human beings are a genetic accident. Really? We observe that are we the only species of the billions of species that have existed on Earth that has shown an aptitude for radios? And even we failed to build one during the first 99% of the 7 million year history, according to Australia's National University scholar, Charles Linweaver. Dr. Linweaver is a bit incorrect, considerably incorrect, that is during the first 99% of the 6 million year history of Caucasian peoples, that the radio did not exist. For what purpose did the human brain evolve? It is a question that has puzzled scientists for decades. And it was supposedly answered in 2010 by Colin Blakemore, an Oxford University neurobiologist, who argued that a mutation in the brain of a single human being 200,000 years ago turned intellectually able primates into a super intelligent species that would conquer the world, implying that Homo sapiens appear to be genetic accidents. Or are we? And I am sniffling, so just bear with me. On July 20, 2019, the galaxy posted The Cosmos. It is a conscious universe without consciousness. The universe would vanish in a puff of smoke. According to M.D. Deepak Chopra and Chapman University physicist Menas Kofatos, in their paper, "You Are the Universe, Like a Dream Leaving Nothing Behind and No One to Know That It Ever Existed." Even to say that the universe is conscious doesn't go far enough. The universe is consciousness itself. According to Chopra and Kofatos, you are the universe. It offers a scientific argument for what they call the participatory universe, as we just stated earlier in tonight's program. The proposition that the universe and human consciousness are inextricably linked. Life would be robotic, according to Chopra and Kofatos. And I quote, "If we didn't have flashes of emotion that come of their own accord, along with bright ideas of every kind, what if this everyday fact of life turned out to be the key to the cosmos? Human beings might be a bright idea the universe had. And once the idea occurred to it, cosmic mind decided to run with it." Well, why? What's so enticing about human beings? Troublesome and pained as we are, only one thing we allow the universe to be aware of itself in the dimensions of time and space. The cosmos is thinking through you. whatever you happen to be doing is a cosmic activity. Take away any stage in the evolution of the universe, and this very moment vanishes into thin air. As astounding as such a claim may be, this book has been building up to it all along. Quantum physics makes it undeniable that we live in a participatory universe. Therefore, it's only a small step to say that participation is total. That is the question that has intrigued the great American quantum physicist John Archibald Wheeler in his writings in the last decades of his life. And I'll quote it again. Are life and mind irrelevant to the structure of the universe? Or are they central to it? Wheeler originated the notion of a participatory conscious universe. I disagree, but let's roll with that. Let's put it this way. I disagree because the books of the Quran and the Bible bear witness to the participatory universe concept for those who are believers in God. You must do something to get something, and to get something, you must be doing something. Okay, let's continue. Wheeler was a major influence on Deepak Chopra and Kafatos to explore some of the most important and baffling questions about human existence. What happens when modern science reaches a crucial turning point that challenges everything we know about reality? In the coming eras, they suggest the universe will be completely redefined as a human universe, radically unlike the cold, empty void where human life and our planet is a mere mote of dust in the cosmos. Consciousness cannot be fabricated. Which makes it possible to reinvent the universe, not as a place where unconsciousness, or rather consciousness, somehow got cobbled together on a lucky planet called Earth, 2/3 of the way out from the center of a galaxy called the Milky Way, but as a place where consciousness is everywhere. There are many senses, or rather sense-sitters in physics, who will concede that nature acts in mind-like ways. But they cannot swallow the proposition that the universe behaves exactly like a mind. A thinking, thought-provoking mind. Chopra and Kafatos conclude that to allow the human mind to fuse with cosmic mind, they must address the mystery of how the brain is related to the mind. The first person who called the human brain the 3.5-pound universe created an indelible image. If the brain is a unique physical object that functions like a supercomputer, then the physicists or the physicalists have won. But there is no reason to elevate the atoms and molecules inside our brains to special status. If every particle in the cosmos is governed, created, and controlled by the mind, the brain also functions as the mind dictates. That's the key to solving this, our last mystery. the mind can dictate the very molecules of our lives. The brain itself does nothing. It is only a housing for the mind to work out in. Therefore, you have it right there, brothers and sisters. The mind. God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My thoughts are on high, and yours are below. We do not see the world the way God sees it. His mind sees things in an infinite possibility of functional things which he dictates with his will. To that end, we come to the close of this particular portion of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I would like for you all to give contemplation and thought to this, because we're going to have to come back to it again. The mind absolutely is a terrible thing to waste. And from my mind to your mind, I say to you all, I'm going to say that again, I say to you all, I love you, I love you, I love you. We'll be right back.
As a boy, I shared a game with my father. Played it every morning till I was 3. He would knock on my door and I'd pretend to be asleep till he got right next to the bed. Then I would get up and jump into his arms. Good morning, Papa. And my papa, he would tell me that he loved me. We shared a game. Knock, knock. Until that day when the knock never came. And my mama takes me on a ride past cornfields on this never-ending highway till we reach a place of high, rusty gates. A confused little boy, I enter the building carried in my mama's arms. Knock, knock. We reach a room of windows and brown faces. Behind one of the windows sits my father. I jump out of my mama's arms and run joyously towards my papa's, only to be confronted by this window. I knock, knock, trying to break through the glass, trying to get to my father. I knock, knock as my mama pulls me away before my papa even says a word. And for years he has never said a word. And so 25 years later I write these words for the little boy in me who still awaits his papa's knock. Papa, come home because I miss you. Miss you waking me up in the morning and telling me you love me. Papa, come home because there's things I don't know and I thought maybe you could teach me how to shave, how to dribble a ball, how to talk to a lady, how to walk like a man. Papa, come home because I decided a while back I want to be just like you, but I'm forgetting who you are. And 25 years later, a little boy cries, and so I write these words and try to heal and try to father myself, and I dream up a father who says the words my father did not. Dear son, I'm sorry I never came home. For every lesson I failed to teach, hear these words. Shave in one direction with strong, deliberate strokes to avoid irritation. Dribble the page with the brilliance of your ballpoint pen. Walk like a god, and your goddess will come to you. No longer will I be there to knock on your door, so you must learn to knock for yourself. Knock, knock down doors of racism and poverty that I could not. Knock, knock on doors of opportunity for the lost brilliance of the black men who crowd these cells. Knock, knock with diligence for the sake of your children. Knock, knock for me, for as long as you are free, these prison gates cannot contain my spirit. The best of me still lives in you. Knock, knock with the knowledge that you are my son, but you are not my choices. Yes, we are our father's sons and daughters, but we are not their choices. For despite their absences, we are still here, still alive, still breathing, with the power to change this world, one little boy and girl at a time. Knock, knock, who's there? We are.
If you will bear with me for a few moments, I want to talk to us on the nature of human beings and the nature of the universe, and show the microcosm and the macrocosm and the similarity in both. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that if you notice, nothing in the universe is produced perfectly round. All of the planets are oblong. All of the stars are oblong. There is no perfectly round fruit, nor is there any round heads. Our heads are shaped like the earth, oblong. And because the first law of the universe is motion, then anything that is not perfectly round and is set in motion will have a wobble to its motion.
That's right.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir.
The earth on which we travel is traveling right now at the speed of 1,037 and a third miles per hour. But it's the smoothest ride you can get, except when the earth is disturbed through earthquake, then you understand this ride is not smooth anymore. But under normal conditions, there is no airplane that you can get on that will give you a smoother ride than the planet that you came up out of and are on your way back into. And it never stops. Its motion is constant. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it makes four dips in and out, giving us our seasons. And the only reason you don't feel the wobble or the imbalance of the planet is because the planet is in such perfect obedience to the law under which it was created that this is what gives you your smooth ride, because it's obeying the law of light. Listen now, listen. You and I come up out of the earth. And in human nature, there is a wobble, an imbalance, an imperfection, if you will. This is why the Bible and Quran agree that the heavens and the earth were created under the number 6. The Quran teaches that the universe was created in 6 periods of time. The Bible says he created it in 6 days. In the book of Revelation, it says, count the number of the beast, for the number of the beast is the number of a man, 666. The number 6 represents incompletion, imperfection, and dissatisfaction. A baby at 6 months is not complete. It's completed at 7. It is incomplete at 6. So anything constructed under the number 6 is imperfect, incomplete. But God is constantly moving things toward completion, toward perfection. And this is why the New Testament says, behold, I make all things new. There will be a new heaven and a new earth, and the former things will pass away. God would not have to make a new heaven and a new earth if he was satisfied with this one. Since it is incomplete, there's always dissatisfaction. And it is the dissatisfaction in human nature that keeps us moving onward toward eventual perfection. It is dissatisfaction that brings about change. And since nothing they say is more predictable, then there's going to be change. Fine. Then if we are created under the number six, we are incomplete, imperfect, and therefore our actions will bring about problems to the degree that we obey or disrespect divine law. I hope you're following me. You notice, Christians, how you constantly talk about love, and that Farrakhan is a preacher of hate. You need to be quiet.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you what produces hate. It's not the preaching of Farrakhan. Farrakhan just got here a few days ago. You have to agree that hate was in the world before I got here. And somebody must have been preaching before I took up the book. And they must have been a better preacher than I. Because the world is filled with hate. And I have nothing to do with it. Here's what produces hate.
Go ahead, make it clear.
Since the heavens and the earth are created imperfect, but evolving toward perfection, the planets created at right angles to each other. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the brain cell of the original people is created to think right. To think right means to think in accord with law and truth. Then if you can think right and act right, you reduce the problem of the wobble in human nature. I'm going to say that again. If you think right and act right, you reduce the problem created by the wobble in human nature. Now, if you don't wish to obey law and follow the dictates of truth, then the wobble in human nature becomes manifest, and your motion then creates disturbance, chaos, confusion, bloodshed, hatred. It is unrighteousness that produces hate. If your nature is to do what is right, and I treat you wrongly, you can't love me even if I'm your father, even if I'm your mother, even if I'm your brother. If I treat you wrong, it is the wrong that I do that will generate hatred in you. Now, listen carefully. It's real hard for any teacher in the black community to produce any brotherhood among us. All of these leaders up here are talking, we got to come together. Well, that's the right talk. But wait a minute. See, that's just talk, and it'll always be mouth. It'll never be real, brothers and sisters.
Go ahead.
I gotta walk a little bit. Listen, It will never be real, leaders, if in your preaching and your actions, you don't treat each other right. If our actions one toward the other is duplicitous, scheming, devious, hidden motives, hidden agendas, playing with good words, but underneath doing evil and dirty deeds, you can't produce love with ingenuous action. You can't produce love on the basis of lies and deceit and treachery and trickery. You can't produce love in a society with murder and robbery and lying and slander at the root of it. So you produce a world filled with hate, because the world is filled not with the preaching of Farrakhan. The world is filled with evil, and it is the evil that men do that has produced hatred in the hearts of the people. And now, what you would classify me as a racist or even an anti-Semite, I'm neither a racist nor an anti-Semite. But if I point out your evil with truth, then call me a preacher of truth. And if you will correct your behavior, then love will come as a result of correction. But you can't cast hate on me. Farrakhan is a no good man. What have I done? If I'm no good, what is America? If I'm no good, what is your president? What is your system? What is your education? If I'm no good because of words, how good are you, America, when you have deeds of hatred that have filled the earth from one corner to another? What are you if I'm no good? If I point out your evil tracks in the sands of time, I didn't make the tracks. You made them. And if I point out the tracks that you made, don't blame me for the evil tracks that you made. I'm trying to make a righteous track. And you want to make me the evildoer. How did it begin? You see, Caucasian people, I'm talking to white folk now, and I don't want you to think I'm a hater. I ain't got nothing to do with it. I just want to talk to you for a minute, because you are the rulers. You are the people that have ruled the earth. You can't argue with me. All white people haven't ruled, but your people are rulers, and so all of you benefit. So if you're a bum, don't blame me. If you're homeless, don't blame me. If you're out of a job, don't blame us. Because you've been ruling the world for 6,000 years. You should be able to have a home somewhere. A wobble in the nature of the original man, and you come from the original, then the wobble is even greater in your nature. I'm gonna say it again. I'm dealing with just pure science now. If you want to attack me, attack me on the basis of science. And don't get angry. I want you to open your ears and start living. I said, if there's a wobble, imperfection in the nature of the original human being who is black. Now, you can call that racism if you want, but I defy any scholar present to prove that white folk predated the original black people of the earth. I defy you to do that. When your scholars, called anthropologists and archaeologists, want to look for the origin of man, they may go through Europe, but they don't stay there. When they want to find the origin of man, they go where they believe man had his origin. And they still haven't found it yet. But the closest they came was Africa. Is that right? The scholars say that genetically they can trace the beginning of all human beings back to the black woman. I didn't say it, the scholars said it. The Bible calls her Eve, the mother of all living. Black woman, that's you. The mother of all living. Now, my Quranic brothers and sisters, you say, Islam does not deal with color. Islam deals with truth. If we're trying to exalt ourselves because of color, Islam condemns us. But Islam has to deal with color because color is a reality.
Go ahead.
Islam says, the Quran says, that when God created the first human being, he created him out of black mud and fashioned him into shape. Well, if he created the first human being from black mud, he couldn't have been a white man. The first human being in the universe was a black man. Now, listen to what I'm saying. If you black people are the first people, and there's imperfection in your nature and mine, and a wobble in your nature and mine, then what about somebody that you produced from your imperfection? So, white folk, you gotta be very obedient to divine law in order for the wobble in your nature not to poison yourself and all whom you come in contact with. But you have not obeyed divine law. You have set yourself up as a law beside God. So whatever God said you shall not do, you all said it's all right. Hang in there. Go on and do it. God said, the Lord thy God is one God. Have none other God before me. Don't bow down to it. Don't make any graven image to it. What have you done? Come on. You make statues of stone and wood and tell us do what? Bow down to it. What did God say? Don't do it. What did you say? It's all right. These are the images through which we get to God. We don't need stone to get to God. God said, you should keep the Sabbath. You didn't do it. And so we don't do it, because we were your slaves. We came up under you. You were our teacher. You wanted us to call you Massa. Yes, sir, Massa. Yes, sir, boss. Yes, sir, Massa. Well, hell, now you got to take the weight, Massa. See, God said, let us make man. You said, let us make a nigger. So the nigger is not God's creation. The nigger is from the figment of the imagination of white people. So whatever we are made in America. Whatever we are.
Go ahead.
If we are trash, you made us that way. So you have to be the trash can. Yeah. I know it's rough. I know it's rough. Listen. We disobeyed.
Right.
And in our disobedience, the wobble in our nature crushed us. In their disobedience, the wobble in their nature, since they are the rulers, they sentenced the whole earth to a certain kind of death under their rule. Now, I have to speak truth. The whole thought of Scripture, bear with me a few more minutes. God made Adam, right? And he tells Adam, eat of all these trees and the fruit of these trees. But this tree, don't eat it. The day you eat it, you will surely die. The serpent comes in and says, look here. You don't have to pay God any attention. See, he's trying to make a slave out of you. What he really means is if you eat this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, your eyes are going to come open. You ain't going to die. Now think about this. Adam ate the fruit, and sure enough, his eyes came open. But he died at the same time. But it wasn't a physical death. This is what you religious theologians have to understand. You did not die physically from the fall of Adam, but we as a human family died spiritually from the fall of Adam. So the scripture says, all in Adam die. Which means then that the whole earth is under the curse of death because of disobedience from the ruler. So the scripture says we are born in sin. And what is sin? Disobedience to the divine law.
Right.
And we have been shaped in iniquity. We came into a world that was already off course. Neither you nor the present generation of whites shaped this world, but this world shaped the thinking of whites, made you believe you were superior because of the color of your skin, made us believe we were inferior because of the color of our skin. So you walk around with your chest puffed out, crazy as hell, because you feel you're better because you're white. And you are crazy too, walking around with your head bent down, feeling that your blackness is something of a divine curse. So neither mentality is acceptable to God. Neither your inferiority nor his or her superiority is acceptable. So both mentalities
have to be destroyed in order that life may come to both black and white. All right. I'm almost where I want to be. Are you listening? So all human beings are under the curse of death. You don't really know real man, real woman, because you have not seen the real man or the real woman, because the real man, which is spiritual man, spiritual woman, lies dead, buried in the lusts of the flesh. Are you following me? Now, brothers, sisters, man is created to have power. The Bible says, and give them power, dominion, over the fowl of the air, the fish of the sea, and every creeping thing. It's in the nature of a man to want and have power. It's in the nature of human beings, but particularly the male side of the species. You are not a man if you're deprived of power and the ability to rule. In the house of the Caucasian people, they did not want anybody else to be the man in their house. So they had to cut us off from power and dominion so that they could be the power and the dominion. For in their mind, two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. If the white man is going to rule, then the black man must sit down. So therefore, black men are deprived of power. We are a powerless group of men. And our women cannot love us like they want to love us. Because they are from God, who is omnipotent. And they adore his power and his wisdom and his spirit and his guidance. And if a man has no power, no wisdom, no guidance, what is there in you for a woman to love? Talk to me. All you can do to try to exercise some power is through sex. And therefore you try to practice being proficient. You don't realize that pain and pleasure are the two most powerful motivating forces. Pain and pleasure. We're always trying to escape pain, and we're always trying to find that which gives us what? Pleasure. The woman wants pleasure, but don't want the pain of childbirth. I wish we could. But I wish I didn't have to. Sorry about that. You have to experience both sides. This is life. So real pleasure comes from the awakening of the spiritual dimensions, when there's communion and union of the servant with God. That's real pleasure. It says in the Quran, O soul that is at rest, well pleased
with thy Lord and well pleasing. That's perfect peace, contentment of mind. That can't be bought with money. Power can't give you peace. Wealth can't give you peace. It may make you feel like I got what it takes. But most people with money are some of the most pitiful people. Because money can't buy what only God can give. Peace. Contentment of mind. Listen now, listen. So, when you disobey God, that is the beginning of the disturbing of your mind. Hear me now. To the Caucasians who are present in the media, look. To be in a position of rulership is tremendous responsibility. The whole human family was under white rule. You have to ask yourself, how did we exercise our rule over the human family? How did you exercise your power over the earth? Did you corrupt the earth? Did you corrupt the water? Did you corrupt the air? Did you corrupt the human beings that you found? And you called, when you went there, you said...
And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We've come to the end of our time, so we must bring this to a close. Well, I wish I had the time to finish. But Allah willing, we'll be back next week. So I leave you as I have always left before. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith.